Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi and welcome to the podcast. I hope you had a good Christmas, whatever it was like for you. Obviously, very different, I'm guessing, to other years, wherever you're listening in the world. But I hope it was okay for you. It's been a massively big week for me, really, because obviously there's been Christmas and then I had my third year soberversary. Do you know, I'd completely forgotten that that was coming up. I've been so busy. But December the 30th was my third year soberversary, and just what a thing. It's just amazing. It honestly is. I do feel proud of myself, and thank you so much to everyone who sent me really lovely messages. It just really means a lot. And and on the same day, or maybe it was the day before my soberversary, I saw all that press and loads and loads of people posted the video of Anthony Hopkins talking about a whole bunch of stuff. Seems like such an amazing guy. But the headline was how grateful he was for his 45 years of sobriety. Isn't that a thing? The fact that it is still such a thing is just amazing. And it just shows how important this is. It literally underpins absolutely everything. So it's been a very busy week for me. Obviously, within the Sober Club, we've had a whole range of emotions over this last week, as I'm sure you can imagine. Lots of people managed their first ever sober Christmas, or at least since they were kids, and were just truly elated at just how amazing it felt to get through Christmas without drinking and just to be fully present, you know, in every sense of the word. So there were some wonderful elated posts. And then there were a bunch of people who did drink over Christmas. They'd planned ahead that they would drink at Christmas. And that was really interesting to read. In almost every case, they were, you know, fed up with themselves. They wished they hadn't. They wondered what the fuss was about. They'd kind of built it up in their mind as, oh, I'll have something, you know, alcoholic on Christmas Day or whatever. And then it was all just one big kind of flat thing, really, that they ended up not feeling great about themselves, even if they hadn't necessarily overdone it. And several of them are kind of back to day one and, you know, getting back on the horse. And that's okay. You know, goodness knows how many day ones I had. But, you know, whatever stage you're at, it's your journey. And there's definitely no judgment ever coming at you from me. But what I think is really interesting is I always say to people, OK, so if you did choose to drink, hopefully you noticed your thought process. What was it that led you to that decision? And then how did it feel? How did you really feel about it? And how did you feel afterwards? And it's just really noticing those thoughts. And you know, if you're good and you're happy to be a mindful drinker and that works for you, then fantastic. But, you know, if you're doing that waking up thing that I was doing, I've told you about so many times, then you know something has to change. So no better time. You know, I ditched the booze on the 30th of December 2017. I didn't hang about waiting for dry January. But whatever stage you're at, just now's the best time. Just make the decision. Obviously, heading into dry January does make it easier because so many other people are doing it. In fact, I saw the piece in the Guardian newspaper with a big article saying a record number of people are doing dry January this year. I guess after lockdown, there's, you know, people have just overdone it. So, you know, it is a great time because you're supported by everything around you. And obviously, as we're many areas are in tier four in the UK, certainly, you know, we can't go to bars or whatever anyway. So, it really is as good a time as any to do this thing. Hopefully you might have seen the piece in the Daily Mail online where I was contributing to a piece on what alcohol really does to your body. They were talking about the changes that can occur if you do a period of abstinence like dry January. And there was a doctor, Dr. Ross Perry, talking about the changes, the way your skin starts to improve and all of that stuff. And then I, you know, shared my experience. Now, obviously, it's a very limited word count. And, you know, for those of you who maybe saw that, you know, I would just, if I'd had more column inches, I would, of course, have added that You know, in my humble opinion, although I think Dry January is fantastic and it's a great way to get you started, I think focusing on just a month and fully expecting all of the benefits to come within that month is unsustainable, and you're likely to set yourself up to fail, because if you kind of just white knuckle it and grit your teeth and feel really grumpy through January and fully expect to have lost a ton of weight and be sleeping well and have glowing skin, you know, by week two, it doesn't always work that way. You know, if you've been drinking for years and years, it's likely your brain chemistry is out of whack and it just doesn't kick in that quickly, because it, you know, it, logically it wouldn't, would it? You will see some benefits, you will. It's really worth doing. But really the longer term benefits kick in the longer term, and it's so worth waiting for. So I would just really urge you to, you know, if you're going to do this, just give yourself a 100-day, set yourself a 100-day challenge. That's a really cool thing to do. And then you'll really kick in with those benefits. And while you're doing it, instead of focusing on the deprivation and feeling sorry for yourself, focus on what you're gaining. You're not giving anything up. You're only gaining. And by the way, I know I've said this a ton of times, but I'll just say again for what it's worth, don't try and lose weight at the same time. You may or may not drop a few pounds, but that's not the point. It's the ditching the booze bit that's non-negotiable. Focus on that. Focus on the optimum health and well-being, and that's how you'll have the best success, particularly if you get connected, if you get inspired, you know, and if you, wait for it, my mantra, keep the ritual, change the ingredients. And to that end, I'm delighted, especially as it's New Year's Eve when I'm recording this, that this podcast, for this podcast, we've teamed up with one of my absolute favourite brands, Naughty. And we interviewed Amanda Thompson, founder and CEO of Thompson & Scott, a while back on the podcast. And she's such a fascinating, lovely character. And she really, you know, she's from the drinks industry. She knew, you know, she really knows about wines and loved sparkling wine herself. And so when she decided to create, you know, an alcohol-free brand, she was coming from that place of really wanting to create something that, you know, really was genuinely delicious and luxe. And she's done it. She's done it. You know, Naughty is just fantastic. It honestly is. It's a non-alcoholic sparkling wine. It's also 100% organic and it's vegan certified. And that's an important thing. You know, the amount of people who are vegans and they're not noticing, you know, some of the crap that goes into conventional alcohol. But anyway, just to tell you a bit about Naughty, in case you haven't tried it, it's spelled N-O-U-G-H-T-Y, by the way. And the grapes used in Naughty are grown with minimal intervention. So there's a real kind of sustainability that goes through this brand as well. They use no animal byproducts, no crustaceans, egg, no fish. I mean, God, I should hope not. But you'd be surprised what's in some brands. So they use none of that stuff in the filtering process. So it is vegan friendly, suitable for those on a halal diet as well. And also, you know, one of the things that often worries people about alcohol-free drinks is the sugar, because we can, yes, get a sugar head on. But they don't use any unnecessary sugar in the production process either. So if you are conscious of that sugar intake, it's, have I got this right, 2.9 grams per 100 mil. I think I've got that right. So it's, you know, it's pretty low sugar. And they also follow through their kind of sustainability angle with the bottles being 100% recyclable, and the cork and the kind of cage that goes around the cork and the box. So they've thought this through. It's a lovely, lovely brand. And as I say, 100% organic Chardonnay grapes, which are from the vineyards located in southern Spain. The wine is de-alcoholized using a historically patented technique, apparently, and that doesn't use any additional sugar or any artificial aromas. So you just get that flavour of the Chardonnay grapes. And it's just such a lovely brand. Honestly, I absolutely love it. It's quite an interesting product, because you can give a glass of Naughty to someone who wasn't necessarily, you hadn't had a long discussion, and you just sort of hand someone a champagne, lovely champagne flute with Naughty in it. And it takes them a while before they realize, if they even do, that it's alcohol free, because it just tastes great. Anyways, so I think you can tell I really like it. It really is a fantastic alternative, you know, to fizz. It's also great for using to mix in with cocktails, of course. You can have it as an aperitif. You can mix it with any of the lovely kind of syrups and various additions to drinks that are around now. The kind of, the syrups and the shrubs, those kind of things. And obviously, you can mix it with other alcohol-free spirits to make a cocktail. So there's a bunch of different ways you can use it. And I'm delighted to say that my favourite restaurant in St Albans in Hertfordshire sells it by the glass. I mean, come on. How fantastic is that? Things are moving on. And it's easily available. It's available in a lot of places online now. Holland and Barrett and many other places, and when shops are open in some shops as well. And obviously from thompsonandscott.com. And we've got a case to give away. So make sure you enter our competition. I'll put it on the show notes, and you can check out thesoberclub.com, and there's a blog post there, and you can see if you want to win a case of Naughty. Obviously, I have to remind you that my book is out. It's super exciting. January the 1st, the ebook version of my book is out. I have told you lots of times that the book's available in February, but Faber and Faber, who handle the ebook, have brought the ebook version, so in all the formats, Kindle and whatever, forward to January the 1st. So I guess that's great if you're doing dry January, or if you're using January to get healthy, because the book... it covers it all. Of course, I would say that, wouldn't I? But it does. There's a kind of 30-day challenge in there. So we go really in depth as to how you can crack this if you're getting started. Great for any behavioural change, actually. But then even if you've been sober for years, you'll find something you love in this book, because there's a huge section of lifestyle stuff. And it's not just me. I have a huge range of experts writing contributions for me. I'm really lucky that these people have agreed to do this stuff. There's Dr. Gemma Newman in there, the plant power doctor. Dr. Hannah Short, Star Kashara, Dr. Eric Sigmund, there's, who else have we got in there? So many people. Neil Shah from the Stress Management Society has written a piece for us on stress. Joe DeRosa has written a piece on meditation. Rebecca Sharman, a piece on cacao. We've got, I kind of remember who my contributor is now, but we've got stuff on yoga. We've got Bev Densham has written a piece on Pilates. Andy Coley and Joe Wilson, who've written a piece on NLP for us. Then we've got, Sharon, London artist, who was one of my podcast guests not so long ago, has written a piece on creativity. We have a section on the menopause. Just everything is in there. So if health and well-being is your thing, you're going to find something in this book, I hope. And of course, it's all underpinned by my, you know, overriding passion, which is that ditching the booze is the missing piece of that holistic jigsaw. So it's everything health and well-being linked. So I really hope you love the book. Please do grab yourself a copy of the ebook, and obviously wait for the paperback if you want. But there's lots of stuff in the ebook, and there's some extra resources as well. Online if you buy the book. I wanted to bring you a guest this week. I was going to do a look back at various clips from previous years, but I just haven't had the time to do the edit. So we will do that at some point. But for this week, I thought it would be really lovely to start the new year with someone who is really inspirational. And when it comes to the whole kind of mental health and anxiety piece, someone who's really been there, done it, got the T-shirt. And Charlotte Reed is a best-selling author and an award-winning illustrator. I'm sure you've seen her gorgeous little pics on Instagram. Her book, May the Thoughts Be With You, is a collection of her own positive thoughts. And they're kind of like cartoon illustrations. And she created them to help herself through her mental illness and during her battle with depression and various disorders. She took comfort in writing and drawing and then went on to make a full recovery. And this book is, I mean, she sold tens of thousands of copies of these books, and she's gained quite a celebrity following as well from the likes of David Walliams and George Osborne, Natalie Imbruglia, even royalty, I'm told. And then she wrote her second book, My Path to Happy,
That's her illustrated memoir describing her journey. So I thought it would be really, really, really nice to actually interview Charlotte. I know Charlotte, of course, as a fellow Hay House author from her first book. And I've interviewed her a while ago for Hay House Radio. And I thought, let's just hear from someone who's been through some mental health issues, because, you know, let's not sugarcoat any of the stuff that's going on at the moment. The mental health issues are just massive right now. Absolutely massive, particularly in younger people, too. And, you know, I know that all of the stuff we talk about, of course, it's a sticking plaster on an ocean. But if just hearing what Charlotte went through can help one person to just kind of reframe some of their thinking and just start to get a sense of being able to, you know, practice self-care and start to know their self-worth, then, it'll be worth it, won't it? So enjoy the interview. Charlotte Reed, it's really lovely to chat to you again. I think we spoke, goodness knows how many years ago, I don't know, when you were with Hay House and the book was out, May the Thoughts Be With You. And I just absolutely loved that book from the second I saw it. You know, I just love your illustrations, and they're just so kooky, and everything about it is so wonderful and inspirational that I just really, really wanted to know more about your story. So I thought it'd be great to share this. So I know that your book, My Path to Happy, is out, and you share your story in that book. So just take us right back to the beginning, you know, to what was going on with you before there were any thoughts of books or success in this field.
yeah, exactly. Oh, thank you. It's a lovely to be on your show. So back in 2008, I unfortunately started to struggle very badly with depression, anxiety and depersonalization disorder. So I was sort of dealing with three mental health issues at the time. And it was just horrific. It was the worst period of my life. And it all came on very, very suddenly. I wasn't particularly happy in life anyway. I was working as a legal secretary, which wasn't particularly fulfilling. Although I really loved the people I worked with, it just wasn't the kind of job I wanted. And then I happened to have an operation on my foot, and I just didn't respond very well to all the anaesthetic. And I'm a quite sensitive person anyway, and I really can't have any kind of stimulants or all that kind of thing. And it just didn't seem to, you know, recover from the operation very well. And it kind of, I think, sort of sent me over the edge from a person who wasn't particularly happy anyway to somebody that was drastically very unhappy. And I just kind of sank down into a very dark, scary place, which I couldn't get out of. And it lasted over 2 years. And I did many things to try and get better in that time. And I was quite adamant that I didn't want to take medication, although I've got nothing against medication. I think it's crucial for many people. For me personally, it wasn't the right path for me to go down. So I started on this kind of journey of self-healing and self-discovery, and tried to heal myself through many different means, things like acupuncture, talk therapy, psychotherapy, CBT, exercise, diet changes. And, you know, slowly I did actually start to get better. So the book, My Path to Happy, is that whole story of how I actually recovered and how I sort of got to the place where I am now today, which is a happy person who's now an author and illustrator as a career. So I kind of put the book out as a message of hope for other people that they can get better if they're struggling as well. There is a chance of recovery, and it doesn't have to be the end of your life when you sort of get a mental illness. There is hope beyond that.
Yeah, absolutely. And before we get onto how all that came about, just, I know there'll be people listening who are sort of thinking, but hold on a minute, you know, was Charlotte, you know, just, was this a case of the blues, or did she have clinical depression? And how did she even begin to start to get better from that? Because, you know, there'll be people thinking, I can't even get dressed. You know, yeah. I don't know where to start. And I'm so deep within this that I haven't got the energy to go after acupuncture. Or you know where I'm coming from with that question. And you must have felt like that at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. So the beginning stages of it, for 6 months, I was kind of a complete write-off. I was, you know, basically spending all my time in bed. I was having like 10 panic attacks a day. I couldn't function. Sometimes I didn't have a shower for 6 days, that kind of thing. And I went to my GP many times to talk about what was going on. And, you know, I was offered medication on each occasion. And, you know, looking back, perhaps I should have taken it, but I decided to go down the different route. It took a while for me to even get to that point because I was so ill, and I had a lot of support from my sort of family and a few of my friends, my close friends who I talked to about it. And I kind of just kind of sat with it for those 6 months, which was obviously very, very difficult. But I was so ill that I couldn't really do anything else. I couldn't function as it were. But each time the doctor offered me medication, I just felt it just didn't feel quite right for me. And it wasn't until I went to actually see a psychiatrist who diagnosed me with these three mental illnesses that she said I could take sort of a concoction of anti-epileptic drugs and antidepressants and do sort of psychotherapy alongside it, that I realized that it was good to know that there was a sort of solution for me. But I sort of felt nervous to go down that medication route because I felt that I might be putting all of my recovery on something that was medical as opposed to something that I could sort of control myself. Mm. So that was just my decision. But I think a lot of people should take the medication because it just depends on that person and what you feel comfortable with. And to be honest, if I got depression again, I'm pretty certain I would go back on the medication. I would choose to take medication. So it's up to the individual, but I think it's about finding what feels right to you and also knowing that there is an alternative out there. And also, even if you are going to take medication, that you can do all these extra things alongside it, like the acupuncture and diet changes and exercise and all those things I did. So they'll give you the best chance of recovery. So it was a real challenging time, but you know, I did get through it in the end.
Amazing. And then on the other sort of part of the spectrum, you know, there are a lot of people, you know, I work with a lot of people who are effectively using alcohol or other drugs to numb out from stuff that's going on. So it's not necessarily clinical depression, but there's stuff they can't deal with and stuff that feels just too hard. So, well, in fact, there was that survey done, wasn't there, that showed that, I think they said something like 24 million people in the UK admit to, in inverted commas, self-medicating to some level. You know, so clearly many of us we're not all completely happy bunnies all the time, and presumably we're not meant to be either. So what's your take on depression and anxiety in those levels, as it were? I always find it difficult to use the terms, because I'm sure there'll be people screaming at me, but that's not actual depression, and so, you know, I don't want to confuse anything, so please put me right. But you know where I'm coming from when I say, what about the many, many millions of people who on a regular basis take something to get them out of that funk that they're in?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we've all been there. I know I certainly have as well. And you know, pain, our internal pain, is very difficult to deal with. So we are going to reach for things that kind of suppress it or avoid it. And that's, you know, we shouldn't be too hard on ourselves about that. But the end result is that we never actually deal with the internal pain. So we could keep on sort of suppressing things forever, but it kind of gets louder and louder until you kind of have no choice but to face it. And so I think it's a very fine balance between not being hard on yourself, but also having that awareness to try and face what you fear about yourself and try and heal it, because it's only by shining the light on it can we actually move through it and sort of embody it, and then it doesn't have as much control over us. I've definitely had to face a lot of skeletons in my closet, as it were, but I'm so glad that I went through that, because then it freed me to enjoy my life more. And I do, because I've faced those issues. So I think it, like I say, it is a fine balance, but ultimately it's never the answer. It can be a temporary band-aid, but ultimately the real healing is in actually facing it and sort of trying to make it part of you and sort of understand that part of yourself and work with it as opposed to against it kind of thing.
Mm, yeah. And as you say, you know, you rocked up to GPs regularly and tried to get various types of support. And that was all a few years ago now. I mean, where do you think we are now from where you sit and from the people you meet? What Do you feel that the current climate has changed? More people are talking about mental health, for sure. Do you think there's more help available? Is it really easier now, do you think? Or is it actually still a mess?
It's so much better than it was when I had my episode. So it was 2008 for me. So that was, you know, obviously 12 years ago. It was so taboo to even talk about mental health then. And I was so ashamed of what I was going through. And that's why I hardly told any of my friends, just a few close ones. And now I think it is a lot better. I mean, we still got some way to go, but if I had a mental health issue now, I'd be so much more comfortable talking about it, reaching out for help about it, and not feeling terrified to even tell my GP. Mm. So I'm really pleased how it has sort of changed. And that's, you know, all thanks to loads of, you know, people like the Royals getting on board for, you know, their mental health charity. And so I think it is good, but we could be doing more. And, you know, when I was suffering, I used to ring the Samaritans a lot, and they were really helpful for me. But I don't know who else, you know, back at that time you could kind of ring or talk to about things. But I think, you know, it's definitely improved, which is brilliant.
And I guess you would agree that staying connected is one of the most important things, because, you know, I've spoken on the podcast a lot about the fact that when people are, in that space and they're drinking too much and things are just spiraling, we can have a tendency to sort of go within and disappear and not want to connect at all. And of course, that's the worst thing, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I feel that community and connection is massively important to just humans, you know, on a day-to-day level, whether you've got mental health issues or not. They can actually make, you know, being part of a community can really sort of improve your life. And I get that sense of community from running a market stall and, you know, being around the other traders and meeting the local residents and customers and things. But you can find community in any area. So you could be part of a choir, you could be part of a sort of, I don't know, ramblers group, or part of a musical group or something like that. But obviously it's difficult at the moment with these current restrictions, but I think that's something that we should have in the back of our minds and working towards. So how can I be part of a community? How can I be connected to other people? How can I find people with sort of shared interests? Because that definitely helps me, and it keeps me on sort of an even keel, as it were.
And you mentioned the market stall in London. Tell us how all of that came about then, because obviously your fabulous book, May the Thoughts Be With You, is an absolutely beautiful book with just incredible illustrations. Just describe it for us and tell us that story of how it came about.
Yeah, so it's a little book of like sort of cartoon illustrations. I don't know if you can see, this is like the front cover, and there's just like
gorgeous
little...
Had you always been an illustrator?
No, absolutely not.
I remember asking you that before, and I just can't believe it, because your illustrations are just absolutely magical. You didn't even train as an artist.
No.
Oh my God, that's incredible.
I did art A level and I got a D, so that's that's how sort of not particularly good I am at art. But I wanted to have the book illustrated, and it was all little thoughts I'd written through my depression to kind of help me get through, and all things I'd written myself. And I couldn't afford an illustrator, so I actually decided I'd have to do the illustrations myself. And that's why they all look like a five-year-old's done, like little stick figures kind of thing. And so the reason the market stall came about was because when I'd finished the book, I got 50 copies printed, and I sent it around all the various publishers and got rejected by every single one. So I thought, do you know what? I'm going to go off and try and publish this myself and see if I can make it sell. So I took a market stall at Portobello And I sold thousands of copies so quickly. It was amazing. Unbelievable.
It's a perfect gift book, isn't it? And you know, very dip-in-able, and you can just turn to any page and there's something inspirational there. So I can see why that would fly from a market store.
Yeah, brilliant. Exactly. So that's kind of how it all came about. But I'm just really happy to sort of have that market community now. And that's part of my life.
Right. Amazing. That is really amazing. So even after all this success, you're still there on the market selling your books.
I am when we're allowed to be.
You're allowed to be, of course. Yeah. And the merchandise. Just pick out a few quotes for us. I wish, you know, that this were TV and we could literally show them all, but maybe just describe, a few for us, some of the quotes. So maybe even describe the image as well, if it's relevant.
Yep. So I've got one of my main characters is called the Shoeless Guru. So he's just a little sort of dude with a beard, wears stripy socks. And he's saying, what is the meaning of life? And life is in capitals, L-I-F-E. Maybe it simply means love instead of fear and ego. So that's kind of I wanted to sum up what I think life is about. And I think it's just a journey of learning how to just be in a space of love and living from the heart instead of being in fear and ego. And he's been a really popular character. He's got many different thoughts that he sort of expresses, but that's one of them. I've got another one here. It is when our plans go wrong that wonderful unforeseen things are allowed to occur.
I love that.
And that kind of came about because my plan was obviously getting my book published by a really top publisher, and that didn't work out at first. So that's why I went off and self-published, which was an amazing experience. And then later I got a publishing deal with Hay House, which was like my dream publisher. So you've got to trust that when your plans go a bit wrong, that there is a kind of like it's a detour in the right direction. It's just sort of you're going about it in a different way. Mm. But it's about having faith that it's all working out for the best in whatever way. Okay, I've got another one here of a little snail, obviously going at a very slow pace. And he says, nobody said modern day life had to be busy or stressful. The pace you go is up to you. And I think that's really important, especially now in what we're going through, that, you know, the slower you go in life, the more you are going to see things open up to you a lot more. If you take your time to kind of look out in your garden every morning, look at what the little birds are doing, or just watch the trees blowing in the wind. I find that so sort of healing, just to kind of really take a moment each day to kind of just look around me and sort of observe my surroundings and kind of get that sort of therapy from nature and just sort of the gentle, simple things.
Mm. Yeah.
Shall I do another one?
Yeah, another one. Yeah. Would be lovely. Thank you.
So I've got the Shoeless Guru again, and he says, as soon as you realize there is no normal to aspire to, your life will suddenly become easier. And I think that's just really important that we often think that there's some kind of normal, life to be living, but there isn't. And you should just actually just live your life how you want to do it and not sort of compare yourself to others. I know it's very easy to do all the comparison stuff on Instagram, but it's actually, there is no normal. And we should just be happy to live the life that we've been sort of, given. Anymore?
Yeah, lovely. That's great. I think people have to get the book right now. I love it. Can you just give us a few tips then, for people who are thinking, well, I know something has to change for me. What do you think are some of the main components? I mean, we've mentioned connection being really important and community, and you just touched there on nature. And I'm guessing that you would say for everyone, that's key, whatever that means to you, even if it is just going and looking at some trees, not everyone can sadly get to the sea or to a forest, but we can all find some kind of green space, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah. Absolutely.
What else would you say?
Well, a thing I've started doing recently, which sounds a bit odd, but I've been grounding myself. I take my shoes and socks off and put my feet on grass just earth.
Yeah.
That kind of really makes me feel a bit more in my body and sort of a bit more present, which is nice. Other things I do to feel good on a daily basis are things like I take an Epsom salt bath every night. I meditate. I make sure that I eat very healthily and I've cut out all stimulants from my diet. So those kind of things kind of keep me grounded. And did you mention about how people are going to make changes? Do you mean to have a more healthier life? Or?
Well, yeah, I think just particularly if people are suffering from anxiety, or even just a case of the blues. I mean, it's just such a difficult time, I think, for so many people. And I think anxiety levels are high, but not everybody knows, well, none of us really know all the answers. But I think just to be reminded of some of these elements of self-care that many of us have forgotten about.
So, yeah, another thing that I do is I watch the news to be informed, but not to be made fearful. So
very good point.
Yeah, I find watching too much news makes me so anxious and so like in a massive head spin. And so I just watch it, you know, just when I actually need to get the basics and the headlines to work out what's going on, but not to be kind of sucked in by it. Another thing that I think is really important when you've got anxiety is to really, if you can, cut out sugar and caffeine, because they really do play a massive part in, you know, sending your anxiety levels higher than they perhaps could be if you weren't on those kind of things. And even alcohol, I've stopped drinking. I haven't drunk now for about 2 years, really.
Good for you.
Yeah.
And what about the mindset piece? You know, when you mentioned that you meditate and obviously you get out into nature, but what would you say to people who, you know, I mean, I sometimes talk about this because when people are ditching the booze, often before they get to that point, they've really genuinely been hearing this voice in their head, you know, that sort of is self-sabotage, you know, effectively. Mm-hmm. So how do you recommend that people sort of tame those thoughts in their head? I mean, I'm guessing that your positive thoughts, putting back those positive thoughts that you've written down in your book, is one place to start, right?
Yes,
But is there anything, you know, is there any specific tips you would give to people who know that they need to change their thinking? They need to actually go in and reframe what they're thinking. Do you have any other quick ways of helping people to do that?
Well, when I have sort of thoughts I don't really want to have, I often write them down and sort of get them out and sort of scribble them down onto paper, almost like it's like a monologue of what's coming out of my brain. And I try and do that, whenever I need to, basically. And that really helps. And it's sort of like
consciousness. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I recommend that a lot. It really makes a difference, doesn't it? Particularly if you write by hand. I know lots of people who have heard me say this before, but actually writing by hand is key there.
Absolutely. And it kind of is a process. It sort of helps you move through those feelings a lot quicker because you're allowing yourself to feel them, but then you're kind of processing them at the same time. So I find that's really kind of useful, just really sort of allowing yourself to write whatever comes into your mind so it can leave your mind. It's a way of getting it out there. And also I do, you know, the whole, I'm sure a lot of people do as well, like the gratitude journal. So, you know, writing down things I'm really grateful for and appreciate about my life and that kind of thing, that really helps as well to focus on all the good rather than, you know, all the areas in my life I want to change kind of thing. So writing has been hugely therapeutic and healing for me.
Amazing. Fantastic. Well, I really appreciate it, Charlotte. And it's very exciting to know that you've got merchandise and stuff. Tell us a bit about that. You've got calendars, I guess, which is perfect for right now.
Yes. Yeah. There's greeting cards, calendars, wisdom cards, like a little positive wisdom card deck, all kinds of gifting items, makeup bags, water bottles. And next year we're bringing out beauty products like bubble bath and hand cream and all that kind of stuff. So it's all on my website, maythethoughtsbewithyou.com.
Excellent. And the current book is My Path to Happy. That's sharing your story, isn't it? So brilliant. Thank you so much, Charlotte. I really appreciate it. Absolutely love the work that you're doing. And it's really lovely of you to come and share your story with us. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. It's been lovely.
Thanks, Charlotte. Check it out. May the thoughts be with you. And just a reminder there, the ebook Happy, Healthy, Sober, Ditch the Booze and Take Control of Your Life is out January the 1st, the ebook version. There are extra resources as well that will be coming your way if you go to happyhealthysober.com and sign up there if you've bought the book. And of course, we would love it if you wanted to check out the Sober Club. If you are listening to this before the 1st of January, we've got a fabulous intention setting workshop in the afternoon on the 1st of January. So do join us in the Sober Club. We do lots of great stuff like this. We have some fantastic experts. I've got a money mindset coach going to be chatting to us on setting goals in a couple of weeks. I've got an expert on grief who's going to be joining us soon. We just have so much great content, so many great experts, but it's small. And the people within our community are really very, very supportive of each other. So, you know, I'm not trying to do a big sell. If it resonates with you, check it out. It's been a life changer for a lot of people. And I'm certainly super grateful for the Sober Club. I had my own real flat down day just after Christmas. It really hit me hard. It was a day that it was an anniversary of a day that I'd lost a couple of close friends, not one, but two very close friends had died on that day in previous years. And it hit me so much harder than I had been expecting it to. I felt really tearful and just a bit sort of blindsided, really, and floored by everything. I had to turn off the news for a good few hours, and I posted my own message in our group, and kind of said, you know, I'm human, and normally I do extremely positive posts, but I kind of reached out and said I'm feeling really flat here, and you know what, support was amazing. It was absolutely amazing, and it does make a difference. And just to be kind of love bombed by a whole bunch of people who understand what you're going through, it makes a difference. So I'm really grateful. If you are a Sober Club member listening to this, you absolutely rock, and I'm really grateful to you. Check it out, soberclub.com, and wherever you are, whatever you're doing, Happy New Year, and I wish you a happy, healthy, sober 2021. And don't forget, set your intentions. I'm sure I've said this a ton of times. Don't make resolutions, please. You just set yourself up to fail. They're just daft. Set your intentions. Look at what you want. Choose a word. Definitely choose a word that you want to focus on for this year. That's a word that sums up what it is you want. And set your goals, set your intentions. Really meditate on what it is you want for you, you know, for the highest good, of course. Yeah, may your wishes come true. Happy New Year. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.